I'm telling an old myth in a new way. That's how you pass down the meat and potatoes of your society to the next generation.
I'm Bill Moyers. Join me for a journey with George Lucas into the mythology of Star Wars.
Hang on.
Welcome, everyone, from across the universe to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Star Wars is for everyone, so pull up a chair, get comfortable, and join the conversation with your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. We're part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network, and this is episode number 554, George Lucas on Mythology. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Anakin Skywalker to my Luke Skywalker, we've got Carl LeClaire.
Now this is podcasting.
Oh, man, I don't know how... I was going to go to the Tosche station to pick up some power converters.
You can waste time with your friends later. Now get to it. You've got a podcast to record.
That's true. All right. Come on.
And the blue one. Come on. The red one.
Red. Yeah. Well, we ended up with the blue one, and the world is safe, and the galaxy is safe because of it. So.
So, folks, we are really excited. This is the first time we've ever done an episode specifically on an interview with George Lucas. And this is one of my favorite interviews I've ever seen of George Lucas. And this is a particular interview he did with Bill Moyers, which aired on June 18th of 1999. So almost exactly 1 month after Phantom Menace came out in theaters. And it's a really, really incredibly deep conversation around the mythology of Star Wars. And as you heard in the intro to the episode from the clip we shared, Bill Moyers did an interview like this with Joseph Campbell back in the early 90s up at Skywalker Ranch. And he returned to have a one-on-one conversation with George shortly after Phantom Menace came out. And the conversation is just kind of about Star Wars in general, but they get into conversations around myth, religion, morality, all sorts of really wonderful things. And if you've never watched the interview yourself, again, we can't recommend it enough. It's very easy YouTube search. Just type in George Lucas, Bill Moyers. It's always the first one. We're going to be playing a ton of clips as we go along. We're going to kind of let George tell the story himself and make some comments along the way. As we've been sharing, we're dedicated now to nothing but Phantom Menace content. Now, granted, this one isn't purely Phantom Menace. It's a broader conversation, but I think it's really important to note, though, that I could not find when exactly the interview was recorded. I'm assuming probably around the time it aired. So I am assuming it is after Phantom Menace did come out,
but Bill has obviously seen The Phantom Menace before interviewing. So if it was recorded, you know, like in early May or late April, he'd seen an advanced screening or something. But yeah, he's obviously seen The Phantom Menace before this interview was taped, back when I'm sure things were still taped and not just recorded. But yeah, I'm really excited about this because not only is it, you know, it gives us an insight into George Lucas and Star Wars in particular, but it really gives us an insight into what he was thinking about as Phantom Menace was coming out, as he's like on the back end of creating the first prequel movie. Obviously he still has the other two, you know, looming on the horizon that he's starting to think about again, but this sort of like, he's able to sit down with the finished product of The Phantom Menace and be like, yes, this is what we kind of were able to achieve. This is what I was kind of going for. And they get into some of the specifics, not too many, but some of the specifics of that throughout the interview. But it's definitely more of a broader discussion about Star Wars in general. And it's great because, you know, George is right in the middle of Star Wars during this interview. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And like Carl said at the beginning, We've never done an episode like this. After over 550 episodes of this podcast, this is the first time we've done a podcast quite like this one before. So I'm very excited to be doing something brand new on the show. So.
Yeah. Me too. And I will say, like, it was really fun. If folks follow us on our Instagram, you would have seen just this past week, the college I work at, I was able to guest lecture in our sociology of religion class there. And I did this hour and 20 minute presentation about Star Wars acting as a pop religion. And I used a few clips from this interview. So this interview has been in my head quite a bit lately. It worked out really well when Jason and I kind of planned out our Phantom Menace celebrations.
Yes.
We knew we wanted to talk about this, and it just very serendipitous for me that I also just kind of spoke on it quite extensively in a college class just this past week. So just so much good stuff here. And I want to share too, like I've just been rereading the prequel chapters from the incredible book by Christopher Taylor, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. So I'm going to share a couple of pieces that I've gleaned from that as well in my recent reread of those chapters, because I think they fit in well here. And I think, you know, the important setup for all of this conversation is, yes, while it is a general conversation around the mythology and morality of Star Wars, it's specific to the launch of the prequel trilogy with The Phantom Menace. And like you were saying, Jason, right, it's kind of what George had on his mind at this time. And right, like there's just so much good stuff in here. I want to start right kind of towards the beginning of this conversation. Bill Moyers essentially is going to ask George Lucas about his whole take on mythology and what is he trying to accomplish with Star Wars in that regard.
Joseph Campbell said that all the great myths, the primitive myths, the great stories have to be regenerated if they're going to have any impact, and that you had done that with Star Wars. Are you conscious of doing that? Are you saying, I am trying to recreate the myths of old? Or are you saying, I just want to make a good action movie?
Well, when I did Star Wars, I consciously set about to recreate myths and the classic mythological motifs. And I wanted to use those motifs to deal with issues that existed today.
Oops, sorry. There's some good music. But yeah, right. So right there, you have it right from the get-go. And I think that this is true for George, both with Phantom Menace as well as with A New Hope. He had a particular intent of retelling classic myths in a new way. He wanted to use mythology to elicit something in young people. And so much of that story is around this basic truth for George about the existence of good and evil within each and every person. And so much of what makes up a human person's life is the choices we make. And each and every day, right, we have this opportunity to choose good or evil. And George wanted to tell kind of a very simplistic tale of that sort of morality.
Yeah, absolutely. He goes on to talk about, you know, how it's obviously Star Wars isn't just a single classic theme. It's made up of many themes and all of this stuff. And he goes on to list a lot of them. And, you know, one of the big ones I really appreciated was, you know, the issues of friendship and your obligation to your fellow man were things that he talked about. And that, you know, we're part of a whole. We all have our stories to play. We all have our adventures to find, the hero's journey to go on, but we're still part of a larger picture in that as well. So, and he's using classic mythological motifs, as he says, to retell these stories for, you know, new audiences and, you know, old audiences alike. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason and I were talking before we hit record about how we were just tempted to just like say, hey, everybody, check out this great interview. Let it play for the 54 minutes of it and then be like, hope you enjoyed it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, at the end of the day, like George does such a great job of sharing such a wealth of information. And Bill Moyers, of course, is just such an incredible journalist. He knows how to ask all these incredible questions. But one thing I will say is George then kind of goes on to talk a lot about how destiny is a huge part of the mythology of Star Wars, right? These characters have a destiny. Clearly that was true of Luke in the original story. And it's true, especially now with the story of Anakin that he's going to be telling in the prequel trilogy. And I thought it was, and George, we'll kind of get some clips about some of this stuff a little bit later on, but George talks extensively a number of times in this interview about, following your bliss, following your passion. And that's really where your destiny ought to lead you. And, for those of you, if you tuned in a few weeks ago when we had Eric Clayton join us to talk about his book, My Life with the Jedi, this was a book that was very much informed by the Ignatian tradition from the Catholic tradition. And at the heart of Ignatius is the spirituality of following your passion, that God's will for you in life is to follow your passion, whatever lights you up, whatever brings you a fuller sense of life and who you are. That is your destiny, to use Star Wars language. So I love that for George, you know, that's always been a central element of the Star Wars mythology, is this element of destiny. And maybe not so much that destiny is something pre-written in the stars, but rather it's this evolutionary process of following what you're most passionate about in life. I would contend, Jason, that one of my destinies for sure is doing the Wampa's Lair for an indefinite amount of time with one of my best friends. So that is certainly something that is, this is me following my bliss every damn week.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Destiny is an interesting thing. And later on in the interview, he also, you know, in addition to saying, you know, follow your bliss, follow your passions, he also says, your talents will lead you there as well.
Yeah.
He says that later on. And so, you know, it's sort of an amalgamation of different things that sort of come together to lead you on to your destiny. I'm sort of synthesizing a lot of his thoughts into my own interpretation here. But it seems that all of this sort of comes together to lead you through life on a path, but you have to be able to, and he'll get into this in other instances as well. You have to be able to, you know, essentially in using the Force, you know, quiet your mind, you know, be able to listen and get the true nature of all of this, because, you know, your emotions, your thoughts can fool you sometimes. You know, sometimes things are just a temporary thing. It's not the permanent thing. It's not the real thing. It's, you know, you can be infatuated with someone instead of being in love with someone. You know, those are very different things. He really brings together in this interview in a way that I haven't heard in a lot of other interviews before, a lot of the different factors and elements of his worldview that George uses, not only in his own life, but in creating Star Wars. And it's really remarkable to see, you know, he kind of throughout this interview hits a lot of these different pieces and different parts of it, as he's talking with Bill. But it's interesting to sort of remember, you know, sometimes maybe we just kind of need to take a, you know, after seeing the interview, it's kind of like, all right, let's go up about, you know, 3,000 feet and kind of put it all together and see how all these pieces sort of interlock together and kind of create a bigger whole than just some of the different specifics he ends up talking about. So he does really give a very honest and frank discussion about his worldview in this interview. And I think this is really just kind of one of the first pieces that we get of all of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then as kind of the conversation moves along, Bill Moyers is going to ask George about whether or not he sees what exactly he sees when he starts his writing process.
When you were writing, did you have all of this in your mind before you got the pencil to the page, or were you making it up as you...
Well, some artists, they see the picture whole, you know, completed. I see the picture in a fog. I know sort of what it looks like. I know what's there. And So what I do is I say, I want a costume that is very regal, very grand, very different from anything we see, but has a lot of cultural history behind it. So I don't want to make something up. I want to use something that is from a living human culture.
I love this response, because we're going to kind of get into in the next couple of minutes here is some of these questions Bill's going to ask about the whole writing process itself. But I love that George is, you know, very clear that, you know, this is, it's not like everything is predetermined. I don't have all the details in my head, but I kind of have a general foggy idea of it. And, you know, this takes me back to just something that's very real about how George has operated with Star Wars over the years, which is consistent re-releases, right? And this dates all the way back to 1979 when he first re-released A New Hope, and then when he re-releases A New Hope again in 1981 and gives it the Episode 4 moniker, right? Like, the George has been playing with Star Wars, the original film and the subsequent films, since 1979, you know? And and Jason, you said this many, many years ago on the show, and it's always lived with me, you know, that you kind of gave this really fun interpretation of, like, to me, like, it's like George goes to a different place when he sees the Star Wars story, and it's like he kind of gets lost in this trance, and then he sees something new, and then he comes back and tells us again. And this was, again, this is probably like 9-10 years ago when we were talking about, like, some of the special edition changes, and you were talking a lot about, you know, the Hayden change and the special editions in 97. And you're like, yeah, it's almost like George was given, like, a new revelation of, like, no, this is actually what the Force Ghost of Anakin looked like. And so he had to rewrite it. And I love this response that George is giving here in regards to the reality of, for him, this story, even the ones that he's put out, is still sort of a foggy interpretation of his imagination. So for George, it's always been clear that he's wanted to go back and update things, make little changes, because it's almost as if the pictures become clear over time.
Things have become clearer, and he needs to make sure we know what that clarity is. So this is his masterpiece. Star Wars is his masterpiece. It will be what he is remembered for. And he knows that. And so he wants it to be the best it can be and the most accurate it can be to what is the vision is, the story is in his mind. Obviously, he's not in charge of creating it anymore. So, you know, that's all kind of been left for now. But yeah, it is great to see, you know, great to hear that, you know, that he's, you know, he considers himself an artist, but he's not, you know, I don't think he ever considers himself a grandmaster kind of artist. Like, he's like, I don't see the completed sculpture in the block of granite. I don't see that. I have to start chipping away at it in order to reveal it to myself. I have to, you know, the fog has to clear. And when I see something that I'm like, it needs to be something like this, and then it gets presented, he's like, that's it or that's not it. And he's putting the pieces together. He says this as well. He's finding the pieces and putting them together as he goes. And I kind of feel like I'm, you know, in that sense, I'm a lot like George Lucas. I don't necessarily have, like, a grand, you know, I've got a grand idea of what I think whatever my project is that I'm working on is. I think it's something like this, but I don't know the specifics until I'm, like, right on top of them. So,
right. Yeah. And, you know, in what's true was when George decided to do the prequel trilogy, and this is something I'm kind of bringing in from the Christopher Taylor book. It's pretty clear when he decided to sit down in 1994 and start writing the prequel trilogy, he pulled out all those old notes from, you know, 1974 onward that he started when he first started writing A New Hope. And he obviously had made some bullet points about the backstory of Anakin, but that's really all he had. So, you know, he had some major things he wanted to put in there, but this was an opportunity to then start fleshing it out. And I think that's true of like anybody here, anybody listening, right? If you've ever written an essay for school or a research paper, right? You got your bullet points. You know the points you wanted to make. You know the story you're trying to tell or the thesis statement you're trying to prove.
Right.
It's easy to drop that in there, but then how you go about fleshing that out, that's part of the fun, you know? And I think for George, that is a lot of the fun that he has with writing and telling these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people that's the challenge. But for others like George, like, no, that's the fun. Right. He gets to, you know, live in that world.
Yeah.
And figure out what's real and what isn't.
Yeah. So this next little clip here is Bill Moyers asks him a really, really poignant question. It's one of my favorite questions in the interview.
Where do these rough ideas come from?
Now that I don't know. That's a mystery.
But 25 years ago, when you cast the original plot, you didn't see these costumes. You didn't see these characters, did you?
That's this is all. Something I didn't really do until I started to sit down and write this script.
I love this. Gosh, I love it so much when he says, that's a mystery. Yeah, exactly. That's how inspiration works. Where does the idea come from? I don't know. I love George's. There's a humility to it for sure. And I think a really authentic honesty in that. I think that's true of any creative. You know, where does the idea come from? I don't know. That's
no
a mystery.
Idea. So it just comes.
Right.
You know, it just appears. It shows up. It manifests somehow. And it's, you know, whether it's generated by your subconscious or your imagination, or it's dropped in from above, you know, who knows, but all of a sudden it's there and you feel the need to do something with it.
Right.
Like that's, you know, as someone who is a creative, who's itching to get my fingers back into something right now, like this is, that's how this feels when something solidifies into an idea, into a project, into a story or whatever the case may be, you know, who knows where it came from, but you got to do something with it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, I'm going to contend, you know, to use my own experience here and my own background in Christian theology, but that mystery is the great mystery to not be too poignant here, but right, I think that's the truth is stories of creative impulses come from something almost beyond yourself. So like, again, from my own particular background, I would call that God. Others, they will call it different things or certainly not maybe necessarily something divine, but we'll get into where George feels God exists for himself a little bit later on, because he talks very poignantly about it. I love this, that for George, the whole process itself is a mystery. And then he's going to kind of go on and talk a lot about how so much of what informs his storytelling is his active imagination. And that's really what draws the way he creates. Let's listen to George talk about imagination.
And do you have any sense of where that comes from in you? I mean, your own creative precincts?
You know, the psychology of developing fantasies is a very interesting and delicate thing. I've come across people that have no imaginations at all, and it's a very interesting...
They become journalists.
Well, I was shocked the first time I came across it. And because I just assumed everybody had an imagination. And when you confront somebody who doesn't, especially a child, it's a very interesting and profound thing to me. An imagination is a trait. You know, it's like anything else. It's a talent, or it's an ability you have to cope, like dreaming.
The underwater.
I love the way he talks about imagination here, Jason. To me, I would almost contend that imagination is almost like the force itself. And it made me think of when he was talking about it, you know, it's this trait, it's this quality that some people have. Now, granted, not everybody does, right? And he points out, like, oh man, the first time I ever encountered somebody without one, it kind of threw him. But I think arguably probably almost every human person has some form of imagination. But like the force, if it's not fostered, it probably goes away. And that was something I always liked in the E.K. Johnston Ahsoka novel, is when you know, we learn that Ahsoka's ability to touch and use the Force has diminished a lot because she doesn't use it, right? She's not practicing it. To me, that's how I feel like George would think of imagination is. For George, his imagination is very vivid, and he gives it space to breathe, right? He tells stories. He writes stories. He's making movies. So for George, imagination is this powerful trait that most people have, but it's important to make sure you're exercising it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as someone whose imagination is an integral part of my identity, I too am caught off guard like George when I find somebody who, when I run across somebody who doesn't seem to have an imagination, it literally doesn't compute to me. So, I would find it poignant as well. And it is something that does need to be fostered. It's something that needs to be encouraged. It needs to be something that's used. Because, you know, we all go through life where we get busy with things and life takes over. And, you know, when the imagination gets put on the back burner, it generates fewer ideas, fantastic things and stuff like that. And so it needs to be nurtured and used and practiced, just like anything else that you do, because, you know, and George calls it a talent, and talents need to be practiced in order to be refined. So, yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of moving along there. Yep. I was telling, so heads up y'all, I apologize. Well, I don't apologize because I love this stuff. As I took extensive notes on this, there's a lot of things I'm going to want to talk about. So I'm going to try to keep it quick since I have so many quotes I want to play. But the next thing George kind of gets into in light of talking about imagination is he talks about developing new worlds, specifically in Phantom Menace with Otto Gunga.
We were using a kind of technology which had to be completely worked out. How do these bubbles exist under there? Where do they come from? What do they use for energy? The whole culture has to be designed. What do they believe in? How do they operate? What are the economics of the culture? Most of it doesn't appear in the movie, but you have to have thought it through. Otherwise, there's something always rings very untrue or phony about what it is that's going on. And one of the things I struggle for is to create a kind of immaculate realism in a totally unreal and fantasy world.
This is not... All right, whatever. I'm just going to be negative for a second. This is something I think that is very untrue for the sequel trilogy. Is I don't think much thought is put into any of the cultures of the sequel trilogy, probably because there's not really any to begin with, you know? I mean, little bits here and there, but without denigrating anything, I think this just goes to show, though, how George thinks about creating new worlds. Is for him, he works out everything about this culture, even if it doesn't appear on screen. And I like that his insistence for Otto Gunga, for the Gungan people, he really wanted this very organic culture, something that kind of coexists with nature. I mean, to me, that's very similar in a lot of ways to the Ewoks, right? This is an indigenous culture that lives in harmony with the nature that surrounds them. That is certainly true of the Gungans as well.
Yeah. And in the way that he is, you know, built the world, it is, you know, this is world building, you know, that is George's doing, and you have it all at your disposal, even if, you know, 5% of it makes it on screen in the final project. But what that does is when you do get to go back and create more stories in these things, like, you know, we've done in comics and books and TV shows, the logic of the locations of the societies is already sort of built in and implied in what we can see. And so it's easy to fit stories and characters and expansions on what we get in the movies into those locations, into those places, into those societies and things like that. So when you have something developed the extent that George is talking about, It means it exists, even if you don't, even if we don't. It means the creatives know it exists, even if we, the audience, don't get to see it all, which means that the foundation is there for more to be done with it if we ever decide to use it again. Yep. So,
yeah. George then goes into a little bit of a conversation, and I'm going to skip this clip because I'll just basically say what he's talking about. So as you kind of heard at the beginning of that last clip I just played, George talks about how, you know, oh, we had to develop this technology. Obviously, this is a huge part of Phantom Menace. Just like with A New Hope, George pioneered new ways of filmmaking. Phantom Menace is the first movie to ever really use digital cinema. Obviously, the first movie to ever use motion capture or, you know, a fully digitalized character. George did all of that. You know, Marvel, mm-hmm. Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, none of those would exist without George Lucas. And I think that's an important thing to remember, especially for people that are very denigrating of the prequels, is listen, it's fine if you didn't like the stories, but to at least not have a profound respect for what George did is just ignorant. But that said, so you know, Bill Moyers asks him, you know, what do you love so much about digital cinema? And George pointed out pretty point blank, I love it because I have a very vivid imagination that I can now make real. And he talks, you know, no surprise to any of us, I'm sure, but he talks about the limitations that he's always lived with. And now with digital cinema, he can really make these really in-depth, fantastical worlds in a computer. Something he would never be able to afford to do in practical effect type stuff.
Yeah. You know, the imagination, going back to his imagination, is so big that sometimes locations are just too big to build, you know, in a set piece. You've got characters like Watto, and he uses Watto as an example, that, you know, it's a small flying creature that you couldn't put a man in a suit with. And, you know, to expand on that is, I don't think you could pull Watto off as a puppet either. You know, it just wouldn't seem quite right. So, you know, Watto only really is able to exist in a digital world because he's so otherworldly, you know, in the way he is constructed, that we can't build him in a way that seems real otherwise. And then, of course, in the, you know, Episode II is the first movie that's filmed completely digitally, and now that's the norm for any movie today, is digital. You just film it digitally. It's all recorded digitally. Sometimes people like to do experimental stuff and go back to filming on film itself, but that's an exception, not the norm anymore. So George changed filmmaking with the prequels, and this is where it started.
Right. And it was all fueled by his imagination. So, you know, as you insinuated, Jason, obviously this certainly interview was done after Bill Moyers had seen Star Wars, because Bill Moyers then kind of gets into the question about one of the most interesting looking characters to him in Phantom Menace. And he asks George about Darth Maul.
The mesmerizing character for me is Darth Maul. When I saw him, I thought of Satan and Lucifer in Paradise Lost. I thought of the devil in Dante's Inferno. I mean, you really have brought from the, seems to me, from way down in our unconsciousness, this image of evil, of the other.
Well, yeah, we were trying to find somebody who could compete with Darth Vader, who's one of the most, you know, famous evil characters now. So we went back into representations of evil, not only the Christian, but also Hindu and Greek mythology and other religious icons, and obviously then designed our own character out of that.
What did you find when you went back there in all these representations? There's something...
A lot of evil characters have horns. Yeah. It's very interesting, though. I mean...
George, I love when he laughs. I like, you know, and this has always been true, but I think it's profoundly true with Phantom Menace, is how much research George put into so much of the creative aspects to this story. And he's admitting that here with Darth Maul, right? It's anybody who grew up in Western culture probably immediately was like, yeah, that kind of looks like the devil, you know, kind of a red person with horns. But I like that George is also indicating, yes, but it's not just that. Like, we went to Hindu sources, we went to ancient Greek sources, you know, we'll get into some more of this as the conversation goes on. But once again, it's George really wanting to tap into a diversity of cultures, not just, okay, this is just, you know, a Christian mythology or a Hindu mythology. He wants to encapsulate so many things so that it can mean, something to so many people. I love that about the way George creates things.
Yeah. And he alludes to this throughout the interview in various ways, but this is basically his application of walking out everything Joseph Campbell taught him. And Joseph Campbell's whole thesis, as Lucas puts it, is to find the connections between cultures, the connections that bind us all together. And George continues to hunt for all of those things in everything that he does. And one of the things that they have more of a conversation about Darth Maul throughout the rest of this. And one of the great things I love about this is that they boil it down, Bill and George do, in the end, to that Darth Maul sort of represents the evil that's within us. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not like this external monster who's coming to oppress us and coming to eat us. He's the evil within us. And I felt like that's a way that I haven't really looked at Darth Maul before. But I really appreciate that sort of that additional level of analysis that, you know, to kind of look at him again. And it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't want it to just be a monster, but somebody human mm-hmm. who has chosen to be evil. Cause again, like we talked about right at the beginning, is so much of this mythology of Star Wars is that ability to choose between good and evil. And we have the choice mm-hmm. to make, right? It's up to us. So this is an interview happening well before Attack of the Clones came out. I mean, he's probably writing Attack of the Clones as this interview is going on, certainly before Revenge of the Sith. But Bill Moyers is going to ask him about how much he knows about the rest of the story of Anakin.
Do you know yet what is going to be the transforming of Anakin Skywalker into Darth Vader?
Yeah.
You already know that.
Yeah, I know what that is. And it's sprinkled throughout this episode. I mean, it's all of the groundwork's been laid in this episode. The film is ultimately about the dark side and the light side, and those sides are designed around compassion and greed.
So I think it's important to point out that for George at this point, you know, it's Phantom Menace is laying this groundwork, as he says, for what's mm-hmm. going to cause Anakin to fall. And I think one of the big criticisms of Phantom Menace when it first came out was, what the heck? Why is George telling the story of a 9-year-old boy who seems to be nothing but purely good? And, you know, Bill Moyers is going to go on a little bit beyond the quote I just shared. And he says right point blank to George, hey, I think people are going to actually have a hard time with this good 9-year-old boy, you know, who somehow becomes Darth Vader. But what George insists upon is, yes, but I'm going to lay all the groundwork here. And ultimately, we know the groundwork being laid here, at least in my opinion, is why, and this is why I love Phantom Menace so much, is that it is very much trying to establish, again, this kind of Garden of Eden, this idyllic place the galaxy is in, and that you have this young, selfless boy, right? He is the opposite of the dark side, which is greedy. He is compassionate and selfless, and somehow he becomes corrupted. But we're going to get to see in The Phantom Menace, well, what's going to be able to corrupt Anakin? Well, something preying upon his fear of loss. You know, mm-hmm. him being taken away from Shmi in this movie is going to be that groundwork that we need to see for why Anakin becomes Darth Vader.
Yeah. Well, it's not just, you know, it's not just the, you know, being taken from his, well, having circumstances take him away from his mother. It's the fact that when he does leave his mother, the person that he's clinging to the most, Qui-Gon, is then brutally taken from him, you know, is brutally killed. Yeah. And that unmoors him. And the person who takes Qui-Gon's place doesn't quite know what he's doing yet. So, it's all built into the pie. And I do love the clip that you shared, that George definitely seems like he's like, oh yeah, I know. And he starts to try and figure out how much he can say without giving out any of the specifics that he already has rolling around in his brain. Because this is obviously something he's thought a lot about, because it's the crux of this trilogy is how Anakin becomes Darth Vader. And he has to have that all figured out, at least broadly speaking, from the get go,
right,
in order to make sure that it all tracks, from one episode to the next. So,
yeah. And from there, George then gets into this conversation about mentors and the importance of having mentors. And of course, as we know, one of the central elements of Phantom Menace is that relationship of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, a master to an apprentice. So George talks a little bit here about the importance of having mentors.
The movie is very much about a mentor and an apprentice. And I'm wondering, did you have such a mentor when you were growing up? Is this part of the movie an extension of what happened to you?
Obviously, my first mentor was my father, but then you progress with either, you know, people that are more skilled in a particular area than you are. In film, Francis Coppola became my mentor and taught me how to write screenplays, taught me how to work with actors. I was much more of a cameraman and a film editor, much more on the technical side of things. And, you know, I think my last mentor probably was Joe Campbell, who asked a lot of the interesting questions and exposed me to a lot of things that made me very interested in a lot more of the cosmic questions and the mystery. And I've been interested in those all my life, but I didn't focus it the way I had once I got to be good friends with Joe.
I love how he refers to him as Joe.
Yes. Yeah.
Just like how he refers to John Williams as Johnny.
Right. I have never heard anybody else call Joseph Campbell Joe.
I love it.
Except George Lucas. You know, even Bill Moyers calls him Joseph Campbell.
Right.
You know, it's not just Joseph. It's not Mr. Campbell. It's Joseph Campbell.
Yeah.
No one I've ever heard says anything other except George. He's just Joe.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a good buddy, which is great.
And I think that's what's so true. And that's what I actually do love about it is, mm-hmm. you know, somebody you don't know, you're never going to call them by a nickname when you first get to know them or when you refer to them. But when you have a nickname for somebody, it's because it's a nickname that they've either told you to call them or that you've started calling them and they've given you the consent to keep calling them that. So it implies the closeness that George shared with Joseph Campbell. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. And, you know, he kind of gives this list of mentors through his life, from his father to, you know, Francis Ford Coppola to Joseph Campbell, you know, and they've all taught him something important. While he doesn't give much details about his father in particular, but clearly his father just taught him how to grow up, be a good person. Mm-hmm. Coppola showed him how to make movies, and Joseph Campbell invited him to ask the big questions, the mysterious questions about life. Mm-hmm. And what I kind of take from this is the fact that George wanted to have master and apprentice relationships so such a focal point of Phantom Menace is to imply once again the importance of having a mentor in your life. Because to me, the whole point of a mentor is to give focus to our potential, right? I've had a lot of great mentors in my life. And what I feel like a good mentor has always done for me is they notice that there's kind of almost like this ball of chaotic potential within me, but they help give shape to it, right? That's the whole point of a mentor, is they see your potential and they help you to actualize it. And George has a history of that. And now he's giving us that on screen. Now, granted, of course, Yoda and Luke in Empire Strikes Back have a master-apprentice relationship, but it's almost like Luke's going there, you know, because it's like, oh, I've got to go learn these lessons so that I can become the hero of the galaxy. But it's very different in Phantom Menace. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan establishes the fact that this is an integral part of the Jedi code, is that you mm-hmm. take on an apprentice so that it's kind of this long-term mentorship. It's not just a quick series of lessons to then go try to right the wrongs of the galaxy, but rather it's this integral relationship that gives focus to who you are and who you become.
It's a long-term working partnership that in which you're able to impart, pass on what you have learned, help to knock off the rough edges, help to refine, hone the abilities and the potential within the student, and by extension, refine and hone things within the teacher as well. Because the thing is, when you teach, you're learning as much as you're teaching. You know, it's just a fact of life. You know, when you teach, you learn almost more than what you're passing on to other people. But yes, I love the idea that we established that the Jedi are a long-term, learning partnership is a integral part to who they are. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, I need to seek out, this sensei or this master to get this specific knowledge. It's like, no, we are here to make sure that you become a well-rounded, integral member of society, community, whatever the thing is, that, you know, our group and all of this. So it's really great that he talks about mentorship. And I do want to just comment briefly that the fact that George calls Joseph Campbell Joe implies that, you know, obviously they know each other very well, which means that not only did George, he didn't just sit there and learn from like his books and his lectures, like he actively went to seek Joseph Campbell out in order to ask more questions, find out things beyond what was in the texts that he was reading and things like that. Like, you know, that sort of is the implication that I get, is that, you know, he didn't just take what was out there and make something with it, which is perfectly fine, and people can do that and be effective. But George seems to have been hungrier and more for deeper insights. And it seems like he's gone and sought out Joseph Campbell outside of, you know, schooling and went back repeatedly for, you know, at different stages in his life while he's working on different things. So,
yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, and then that gets into this whole conversation then about the importance of having teachers, right? Mm-hmm. A mentor is essentially a teacher. And George has some really, I think, really profound things to say about the need for teachers.
Of young Americans.
I have a philosophy that we all teach, and we all teach every day of our lives. And it's not necessarily what we lecture. I've discovered kids don't like lectures at all. But it is really the way we live our lives.
Exactly, George.
Yep.
It's teaching by example. And I think, so to point out this brand new Star Wars novel, The Living Force, that, you know, just came out last week by John Jackson Miller. The whole premise of that book opens with Qui-Gon going to the Jedi Council and challenging them, saying, y'all have lost touch with the everyday person. You're up here in your Eiffel Tower, you know, just so concerned with the cosmic force and the workings of the Republic that you've forgotten about the people of the Republic, the people we're called to serve. And he challenges them to go encounter the people. And that's what the whole book is about, is it's that adventure. You know, for George, a good teacher is one that models by the way they live, not just by the things they say. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite saints, Saint Francis of Assisi, you know, famously said, teach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words, right? Like this idea of, it's not about teaching dogmas. It's not about teaching rules and regulations, but it's about living an example of a life of compassion. And I think that's what Qui-Gon, you know, that's what Qui-Gon models in The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To use another, you know, from my own personal background, Christian background, another saying, and it may be a quote that's been expanded on from C.S. Lewis. I don't remember where it originated, but I've heard it multiple times in multiple places. There are five Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and yourself. And most people will never read the first four. So, and so that's that idea is like, you know, you teach by what you do, by what you say, how you live. And George definitely ascribes to this idea, and that sort of thing. So I do love that. And I do think it's true, because you're going to teach somebody something, even if you don't intend to.
Right.
And you have to be careful, because what you might teach is something you don't want to teach, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not only just like a, hey, yeah, you're always teaching. Isn't that a great thing? It's also like a something to be aware of. Because if you're not careful, if you're just, you know, doing something willy-nilly, you snap off at something or whatever, then you're going to teach somebody something you don't want to pass on. So,
yeah. Well, and then a few moments later, George goes on to talk about how people in media essentially have a platform, and mm-hmm. they almost have an obligation to use that platform to say something good. So I think that's really interesting for all the people that get really mad when Star Wars creators today have something to say about issues in our world. People like to be like, oh, I don't want to hear that in my Star Wars. George has been doing it since 1974, so get over yourself. You have a platform. Use it to stand up for things that matter. And that's what George would have been 100% on board for. In the Christopher Taylor book, he actually talks about when George was writing Phantom Menace, this in kind of rehashing the script, he's making a lot of direct commentary on some Republican politics. George was very anti-Republican. Sorry for all you Republicans out there, but deal with it. It's true. George was not a fan of the GOP, and purposely picked the name Newt Gunray as a play on Newt Gingrich. So he was going hard at him from 74 through 99. George had something to say. He used his platform to speak up. So I won't go into too much beyond that, but just for the fools that like to think that Star Wars never has anything to say about the world around us, you've always been wrong. But moving on into this, the next section of this, interview is by far my favorite part of the interview. And it's where they have a really intense conversation around the religiosity of Star Wars. And these are the next couple of clips I'm going to play are the ones that I definitely used in the class I talked in last week. But here we have Bill Moyers talking to George quite explicitly about Star Wars and its religious import.
What do you make of the fact that so many people have interpreted Star Wars as being profoundly religious?
I don't see Star Wars as profoundly religious. I see Star Wars as taking all of the issues that religion represents and trying to distill them down into a more modern and more easily accessible construct that people can grab onto to accept the fact that there is a greater mystery out there.
If one is to understand the great mystery, they must study all its aspects, not just the narrow dogmatic view of the Jedi.
All right, Palpatine, careful there.
But once again, we have George here talking about, again, wanting to bring in this diversity of religious expression and religious experience. He didn't want it, you know. I thought it was funny when he's like, oh, people think Star Wars is religious. It kind of threw me for a second when he's like, I don't see Star Wars as religious. Like, whoa, easy there, George. But then as he kind of goes on, it's like, it's not meant to be a particular religion. It's actually drawing right from all these religions. You know, Mark Hamill always famously said, the Force is religion's greatest hits.
Yes.
And that's what George is doing again, is he's bringing in all of these different religious aspects and making them accessible. You know, mm-hmm. as he talked about earlier in the interview, He really wanted to rekindle young people's imaginations in mythology, and he also wants to rekindle young people's minds around spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah, and he goes on to talk it might be in this section, it might be a later section, but he goes on to talk about how he's had people say that they've used Star Wars to, you know, tell stories or make connections with, you know, various, you know, ways of faith, you know, Christians, you know, with the Quran, with the Torah, and all these different things. You know, people from all these different faith walks are able to use Star Wars in a way that, you know, they can connect back to and use as examples and illustrations for their own teachings and their own beliefs and things like that. And you know, as you said, George really kind of uses the Force and you know, as a way to develop the curiosity and the idea that there is something, there is a higher power of some sort. There is something beyond us that we should consider.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not going to sit here and, you know, proselytize or evangelize and tell you, well, it should be this, that, and the other thing. He's going to be like, no, you just need to make sure that you're considering this and that you're thinking about it and that the possibilities exist and that it's good to dive into these mysteries,
right?
And to find your faith in all of it,
and that's one of my favorite quotes in this section. I'm not going to play it, but his quote is, he says, quote, religions are a let me make sure I get the quote right. Religions act as a, quote, container for faith. I love this. Even as somebody who's studied theology from a large portion of my life, I've never heard it so eloquently put that way, is that religion as a human institutional creation is something that gives shape to something sort of inexplicable like faith. And I think, again, that's where George is getting in the whole idea of the Jedi Order. The Jedi Order exists to give shape to the Force. The Jedi are not the Force, as Luke clearly tells Rey in Last Jedi, right? It's if the light is still there, regardless of if the Jedi are. But I think what George is trying to say with Phantom Menace is that the importance of the Jedi Order is that they help give shape to this cosmic will of the Force, that there is this great mystery that exists, and the Jedi are always trying to tap into it to better understand it, to better give it its focus in the real world. In the same way that religions function in that capacity too, is people have this this faith in something transcendent, and then we create these institutional languages to give it shape. And I love how George brings that into Phantom Menace with the Jedi Order.
Yeah. Yeah. And to George, it appears faith is more important than religion, because he goes on to say that faith is the glue that holds us together as a society. Mm-hmm. And then it's part of what enables us, it enables us to remain stable, to remain balanced. And that just, you know, George doesn't care what faith you have, he just cares that you have faith. So or at least are looking for faith,
right?
In a sense. So that's the worldview that he's bringing all of this, and that's what he's trying to imbue Star Wars with, as a way to help people explore and to make the ideas of something bigger and more mysterious outside of ourselves more accessible to you know, people who may not have the imagination to conceptualize that on their own.
Right.
So.
Right. And then, you know, Bill Moyers asks him point blank about God and the Force. And I love George's response to this.
And where does God fit into this concept of the universe, in this cosmos that you've created? Is the Force God?
I put the Force into the movies in order to try to awaken a certain kind of spirituality in young people, more a belief in God than a belief in any particular, you know, religious system. I mean, the real question is to ask the question, because if you haven't enough interest in the mysteries of life to ask the questions, is there a God or is there not a God? That's for me the worst thing that can happen. You know, if you ask a young person, is there a God? And they say, I don't know. You know, I think you should have an opinion about that.
Do you have an opinion or are you looking?
Well, I think there is a God. No question. What that God is or what we know about that God, I'm not sure.
Love it right there. Jason, I'm going to share something real quick that's going to make me sound pretty pathetic, but I don't care. Years and years ago, we got some really negative reviews back on the old iTunes store, and people were mad that I ever brought, we ever dared to bring up like Star Wars and religion or God. Mm-hmm. But here you have it from the creator's mouth himself, that he himself believes that there is a God. He wanted people to ask that question. Now, I love that he says for him, I mean, it sounds like the way George describes it, he's very much an agnostic, right? He doesn't quite know exactly how he would define that God, but he certainly believes that there is one. This is not me trying to say if you're a listener and you don't believe in God that you're wrong or anything like that. Certainly not a judgment of any kind. But for George, again, there are these great mysteries, these things that inspire his own imagination outside of himself. And while he doesn't quite fully grasp it, which no one ever can, by the way, whether you're a believer or not, George is also intentional with the fact that he's doing this for young people. That's always been huge for George. And I think that's even more true for George with the prequels because he's been a father now for the last 10 years or so, right? So for George, the whole idea of the Force, this spirituality that's imbued in the Star Wars mythos is important to him because he wants young people to just simply ask the question, to go explore for themselves and find some form of spirituality, faith. Again, like for him, he's not trying to espouse a particular religious institutional language or a religious system, to use his language, but he is trying to elicit a desire to just ask the question, to go looking for that mystery. And I love this. You know, I mean, as a person who does this for a living, my job is to engage people and help them engage with the great mysteries of life. I love that we have someone like George Lucas out there who has a far more creative imagination than myself and a far bigger wallet to go ahead and tell really good stories that dare you to ask the question.
Yeah. To sort of follow up on all of this is Bill also.
Well, I love that you called him Bill.
Yeah, Bill. Yes, Bill Moyers. We'll also bring, I mean, it's Bill and George. Come on. It's Bill and George. They're sitting down, they're having a conversation. It's an interview.
I love it.
But it's really kind of just a conversation between these two guys. And it's really a fascinating conversation. So if you have the chance to watch the whole thing, it's almost an hour. You really will enjoy it, I hope. But he, you know, he says that some, you know, there are some young people today are turning to movies for their inspiration and not organized religion. And George is like, well, I hope that doesn't end up being the case for this, because I want this to continue to point to something bigger, you know, and that is the concern. And it's the, you know, he says that he thinks there is a place for organized religion. You know, he's not going to say that organized religion is perfect, because obviously, you know, he bases the fall of the Jedi Order on, you know, religious institutions that go corrupt or lose touch, you know, because there's obviously there's countless examples of that throughout history, because religious organizations, while they claim to be, you know, following God, are still run by people and we're all fallible. So, But, you know, George believes that there's still a place in society for those kinds of things. And he doesn't want, you know, he's viewing himself as the messenger. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want the messenger to become the divine inspiration, if you will. He wants the messenger, the message, to keep pointing people to asking the questions and finding their own inspiration. And so I do appreciate the fact that he's conscious and aware and a little concerned about, you know, where that might get muddled. But that he still hopes that it serves the larger purpose and people will understand that in the end.
Yeah. So. I love that, Jason. You pointed to something. I wrote down the quote, and George says this quote, "I think there's definitely a place for organized religion. and I'd hate to find ourselves in a completely secular world where entertainment is passing for religious experience. End quote.
That sounds like a terrible world to me. Like I know on the surface it sounds like it could be fun and exciting and stuff like that. But as someone who has such strong religious beliefs and that unmooring where entertainment, which is dictated by whims and what's popular nowadays, could be the religion. That sounds like a terrible thing to me in the end. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go philosophizing on you for a minute there, but that's, I'm with George. I'm with George on this one.
No. Yeah. I mean, I of course agree. You know, I think, I remember I took a really great class in grad school called Contemporary Disputed Questions in Theology. And we did an entire unit on, you know, the kind of this modern movement of spiritual, not religious. And, you know, a lot of that is driven by the fact that, you know, religions have done a lot of harm to people. And that is a fact of life. You know, and sometimes people, you know, young people will say, well, like, I don't believe in organized religion. So I remember a professor saying, so respond to that by saying, oh, so you like disorganized religion. But it was this, again, there's kind of this notion again of like George is implying here is faith in something beyond yourself, faith in this greater mystery, whatever you choose to call that mystery, is an integral part of the human experience, and religions help give shape to that. And while George is very adamant that he will not espouse one particular religion, and I really appreciate that he doesn't do that, what he's simply trying to say is that these are important aspects of the human fabric of life. And they always have been. And to think of a world devoid of that, in George's own opinion, is one that's kind of sad. You know, entertainment is certainly good. And I think like these the mythology of Star Wars is incredibly life-giving. Mm-hmm. But I think it's incredibly more life-giving when it points you and anchors you in something profoundly real. And again, whether or not you choose to call that God is totally up to you. But yeah, I think it's, this is my obviously favorite section of the interview.
we get to, flex our theological muscles, with this part of the interview. It's really great.
Yeah.
Both Carl and I really enjoy these types of discussions. So pardon us for geeking out on, something non-Star Wars there for a minute.
But moving from this conversation around the religion and faith aspect of Star Wars, Bill Moyers then goes into asking specifically about the Jedi, who are kind of the scions of the Force in the Star Wars mythos. So let's listen to George and Bill talk a bit about the Jedi and their role.
I guess they're like ultimate father figures or negotiators. And at this point in time, they're sent out to negotiate a deal.
How do you think this trade viceroy will deal with the Chancellor's demands?
These Federation types are cowards. The negotiations will be short.
They help to put forth answers where people are in the middle of a dispute.
Do not defy the Council Master, not again.
I shall do what I must, Obi-Wan.
They aren't an aggressive force at all. They will not go along with you this time. They try to, conflict resolution, I guess, is what you might, intergalactic therapists.
Oh my God, I love George Lucas.
Intergalactic therapists.
Intergalactic therapists.
And then
therapist.
He cracks, yeah, and then cracks, he cracks up at his own joke.
Yeah. Two of my like closest friends at my job are social work folks, and they're two of the most lovely people I know. And when I was rewatching the interview over the weekend to make my notes, I texted the both of them. I was like, from now on, I'm referring to both of you as Jedi because you're intergalactic therapists. but I love that, right? Because in the original trilogy, the Jedi never are fully defined. I mean, yes, Ben Kenobi tells Luke in A New Hope that they were the keepers of peace and justice. Mm-hmm. And I would say that what we can probably glean from A New Hope is that they were the knights, right? They were the medieval knights that fought for justice and good. And then in Empire, we have certainly get a sense that they are informed by some form of spirituality. We get that from Yoda's training on Dagobah, but they're never fully defined of what was their role in the galaxy. So here we get it in Phantom Menace. George has to be very intentional about what was the purpose of the Jedi Order. Well, it's to settle disputes. It's for conflict resolutions, to be these therapists, to be these caregivers in times of crisis. That's the whole role of a Jedi, you know? And I love how he points out they're not a force, you know, even though they use the force, they are not an aggressive force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But they're there to help people in need. They're there to iron out the stickiness of life.
Yeah. It's why the lightsaber is, especially at this point in time in a world of blasters, is a defensive weapon. It's not offensive, you know, and it goes back to Yoda in Empire Strikes Back saying, you know, a Jedi uses the force for knowledge and defense, never attack. You know, obviously a Jedi will have to defend themselves and things like that. But George is very clear that the Jedi are conflict resolution specialists, if you will, like that is their goal. And they are, at the core of it, it is, you know, a driven by a spiritual code or a moral code, that sort of guides them and holds them all together like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next thing I wanted to hit on is George is going to talk a little bit about one of his main themes in Phantom Menace being that of symbiosis, which of course we know Obi-Wan talks about. But let's hear what George has to say about it.
One of the main themes in the film is having organisms realize that they must live together, and they must live together for mutual advantage. Not just humans, but all living things and everything in the galaxy is part of a greater whole.
Well, we'll leave R2 in there for Jason. you know, very simple quote, but I think such a beautifully important one. I think when George was telling this story, he was well aware of the increasing divisiveness, certainly in the world, but specifically in our own country, and really wanting to point out this important theme of symbiosis, of people working together for their advantage, right? It's this sense of togetherness. And I mean, to me, that's, you know, 25 years later now, and that's still a message we really need to keep hitting home on is, you know, as we continue to become more and more divisive in our own culture, in our own society, it's this reminder that when we work together for mutual advantage, that's when things start to look good. And of course, George obviously is giving us that with the Gungans and the Naboo.
Yeah. And he also, of course, you know, in his conversation there, in this interview, he partially quotes what Qui-Gon says about the midichlorians too, you know, life forms living together for mutual advantage. Like, so, you know, that's George uses that same phrase in this interview, which means, you know, George wrote that dialogue. because it's what he feels, it's what he believes. And, you know, so not only are we to, you know, live together and to work together, you know, as parts of a greater whole, you know, as individuals within society, but it's also, you know, people with, you know, the world around us as well. It's part, it's everything. Everything has to be working together as part of a greater whole. So.
Yeah. Good point. Right. That there's this interconnectedness that should trump divisions, you know?
It should George might be a little idealistic because everyone thinks that their way is the right way that we should all work together on. So the problem comes when people have two different ways that they think that we need to be working together on, and we got to figure out the best way to come to an agreement about that. But like Padme says in Attack of the Clones, it's what we do, but the problem is not everybody agrees. So
yeah, well, then they should be made to.
Right. I'm sorry. Wait, what?
I'm sorry. Come again?
Come again? By who? Who's going to make them? You?
Of course not me. Someone.
But someone.
Someone okay. Wise.
Sounds an awful lot like a dictatorship.
Listen, I'm just quoting George.
Oh, sure. Well, he is the dictator of Star Wars.
That's
at least
true.
He was,
yes, for many years. Oh, man. Well, we alluded to this a bit earlier in the conversation, George talking about the importance of listening to your inner self, to your inner feelings. So Bill Moyers then takes this conversation into this aspect of what does it mean to use the Force and how is that connected to listening to your inner self?
Why is it so important to you, as it is in your films, to listen to your inner feelings?
It's an issue of quieting your mind so you can listen to yourself. And as Joe would say, follow your bliss. It's to follow your talent is one way to put it. That's the way I see it. The hardest thing to do when you're young is to figure out what it is you're going to do. And you'll never know what it is you're going to do. But if you follow the things that you enjoy, I'm not sure anybody really enjoys making money. They may enjoy what they do after they've made it, but they don't enjoy the process. If you can find something that you actually enjoy the process, then you found your bliss.
When did you?
He says, when did you find your bliss? Oh, movies. George loves movies. But yes. This is such, I mean, again, such great life advice from George Lucas. And as I alluded to earlier in the episode here, you know, where this has always been true for me is from good old St. Ignatius. follow your passion, because where your passion is where you find God's purpose for you. Sorry if y'all for all this the Christianity here, but this is what I know and have lived. But another one of my favorite quotes is from Saint Irenaeus, which is one of the earliest church writers, and he says, "The glory of God is the human person fully alive, aka when you're living your bliss. that's how you bring glory." If for George to really talk about that, and he's not just talking about it again, kind of as you alluded to earlier, Jason, right? Like it's, I just completely lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry.
Do you want me
please,
to go ahead?
Yes,
and start
please
talking?
Go ahead.
Okay. One of the things I do love about this whole discussion that George is having right here is that he says, you know, the biggest challenge is that you're figure out what you're going to do. And the problem is that you never really know what you're going to do. And so the way to ultimately find that is to follow these passions, follow what drives you, follow what makes you, you know, gives you this joy is sort of how I would interpret it, you know, and to be able to use those talents, use that bliss, as he puts it, to take you along the journey. And ultimately, when you look back, then you'll figure out, oh, that's what I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. But it's not one of these things that you can sort of like plan out from the get-go. It's you've got to follow these different things. It's everything's a step, right. A step in this direction, a step in that direction. You're following things. Sometimes you'll take the wrong path, but, you know, other times you can correct and things like that. You know, it's and sometimes you fall on your face and you got to figure out how to get back up again. You know, it's not a perfect, you know, path. It's not a blueprint, an infallible blueprint, but it is something that you can use as guideposts along the journey of life. And the great thing is if you can figure out what your purpose is while you're still walking it out, you know, that's almost a bonus.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think where this really applies in Phantom Menace is, again, looking at Anakin. You know, you're mm-hmm. a pilot all my life, you know, yeah. and his talent as being a pilot is also his bliss. But Mom, I love it, you know. Mm-hmm. That talent of his, this passion and bliss of Anakin's, is ultimately what leads him on his path to becoming a Jedi, right? Following his bliss led him out of his state of enslavement, you know. Yeah. And I know that's a very intense example, but it's quite true for George, because he's that was his own lived experience. When he first fell in love with film, that became his bliss. It became his passion that he followed, mm-hmm. and look what he did with it. And I feel like that sort of translated into the character of Anakin, specifically in Phantom Menace, is he's following those talents. He's paying attention to those passions of his. And by following it, it brings him into a place he probably never could have imagined. The problem is, of course, is then as we get into episodes 2 and 3, is he then becomes almost a victim of this overly institutionalized system that then starts to put constraints on his bliss. Right. So,
and those constraints are then twisted and manipulated and used against him by someone who is actively seeking to bring him down.
For sure. But yeah, I love listening to George talk about it.
I do just want to say, you know, with Anakin, it's definitely something where, you know, following his talents is something that he was able to do in order to pursue things. But it also came in hand with his just goodness and compassion that he has for these people that he just met. You know, it's like, well, they're in trouble. Well, we should help them. And how can I help them? By racing pods, you know. Yeah. So it's all of that sort of comes hand in hand and goes together. And is what enables him to get his freedom, you know, through hard work of Qui-Gon Jinn on the side. So,
yeah. And right. And the clip from Star Wars that preceded this particular part of the conversation is Luke deflecting the blaster bolts on the Falcon in A New Hope. And, you know, George opens by, Bill Moyers asks about, you know, why is it so important to quiet your mind? That very much, the whole aspect of meditating and quieting your mind is obviously very much informed by Eastern spiritualities and Eastern religions, much more so than Western Christian traditions. Mm-hmm. But it's obviously very important to George to put that also into what it means to be a Jedi, is these are folks that honor meditation so much because it's by meditating that they are able to quiet their minds and tap into that will of the Force that's all, you know. When you learn to quiet your mind, you'll hear it speaking to you. I don't understand. With time and training, Anna, you will. You will.
Yeah. Yes. And it is that quieting of the mind, if we're going to take it, you know, in a more practical aspect, that allows you to sort of distill things down and to eliminate the distractions in order to really find the kernel of what it is that's driving you, really find the motivating passion within you that you can then follow.
For sure. And as the conversation then kind of starts to wind down a bit here, George goes into another central aspect of a theme in Phantom Menace that he wanted to hit home on, and that is the theme of letting go.
The Phantom Menace is about letting go?
It's about letting go.
In what sense?
In the sense that you have this young boy who's 10 years old who has to leave his mother and go off on his own, and the mother has to let him go because otherwise he would be a slave the rest of his life.
As much as I want to let that scene play out, we won't, because we don't need to cry right now, Jason. But
right
after the clip, he hold on here, da 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 da. So he says a little bit more.
At some point, you do have to become an independent person. And it's about learning to let go of your needs, so to speak, and think of the needs of others.
So,
right, that's in a way, Anakin's already there. He's already thinking about the needs of others. you know, there's a whole point of that dinner conversation or lunch conversation. But I love that is,
and it's interesting. Sorry, before I want to say something before I lose the train of thought. And it's that sort of the corrupting that happens in the later prequels is that you know, the thinking of others, that the selfless thinking of others gets corrupted, and he starts thinking more and more about himself.
Right. Exactly. Great point, mm-hmm. Jason. But of course, he centers this in the experience of Anakin having to leave Shmi. Shmi mm-hmm. embodying kind of the idyllic parent, the idyllic parent is one who lets their children go, who lets them enter into the next stage of life. And for us, becoming an adult is a series of letting go of our past, letting go of the mistakes we've made, letting go of our old ways of thinking, on learning what we've learned before, to use Yoda's own terminology, right? Phantom Menace is the first story in this episodic Skywalker saga, and one of its central aspects is the importance of letting go, because that's how we grow. It's about how, and it's about how we move forward in life. And as you just so eloquently put it, Jason, that's what's going to become corrupted and lead to Anakin's downfall, is his inability to let go.
Right. Right. Because it's all turned inward towards himself instead of being outward and thinking about others and putting, you know, others ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's just a couple more things here. And, man, I'm really having a great time with this.
Oh, me too. This is great. This is great.
But we
hope you're enjoying, you know, the George Lucas and Mythology 101 here at Wampa's Lair University with Jason Carl.
Yeah. I love the, I want to go in now as the interview starts to close up. George talks pretty poignantly about who he writes Star Wars stories for. And I think that's really important. I got some things to say about it, but let's hear what George has to say first.
I see my audience, and my audience is me. You know, I make these films for myself more than I make them for anybody else. I mean, I'm lucky that the things I believe in and the things that I enjoy and the things that entertain me entertain a large population. Sometimes they don't. I mean, I made a bunch of movies that nobody's liked, so that doesn't always hold true. But I certainly wasn't out to become successful. It happened.
You're financing your own movies.
I'm financing my own movies, and it allows me the freedom to have my own vision be accurately portrayed on the screen.
I love this, Jason, because in a sort of eerily foreshadowing way, George is almost predicting where the prequels, how the prequels will or will not be accepted. Now, again, this aired in June, so it's a month afterwards. Who knows how long after the movie came out the interview itself happened. But George is, at this point, well aware of the negative press, you know, well aware of the negative fan backlash. That's just going to intensify and get meaner as the trilogy goes on. But I think it's really important that for George, these stories are for himself. You know, he tells these stories because he loves them, because they mean a lot to him. And this is a story he has chosen to tell, fully understanding that it's not going to be for everybody. And he's okay with that. And he believes so much in the vision that he has and so much in the story that he has that, again, he finances them himself. You know, that goes all the way back to Empire. All the profits he made from A New Hope, he threw into making Empire Strikes Back. If Empire had been a flop, George would have been out of luck.
Right.
And he's doing the same thing with Phantom Menace. Is he's throwing all his own money behind it because, again, he wants to be able to do it exactly the way he wants to do it. And he doesn't want to be beholden to any sort of studio stuff. And he really believes in himself. And I actually think this is a really interesting take on the American dream. George Lucas is an embodiment of the American dream. Now, granted, the American dream is not equally accessible to all human persons in our country, unfortunately. But all that to say, George, more than a lot of other people who claim to be self-made people, Mr. Trump, George actually came from a blue-collar background, worked very hard, and made something of himself. And I think in a really interesting way, George embodies what that American dream is all about. This ability that if you work really hard, that if you have a drive, if you have a passion, you can really make something of yourself. And I love for George, that's him once again betting the farm on Phantom Menace. He believes so much in his vision. He believes so much in the story he wants to tell that he's willing to risk it all. And I don't know, it just, to me, it makes him really admirable.
Yeah. And one of the things that I do appreciate about all of this is that this is all in service to the vision, the art, the product, the voice of this being his, being authentically what he wants it to be, being honest to the vision and the story that he's trying to tell. And that success isn't what he's aiming at. You know, he's aiming at I'm trying to find the right word. He's aiming at making sure this fits. He's aiming at making sure that this reflects the honesty of what he wants to say accurately. And he doesn't want, because this all reflects on him, and he doesn't want what's put out there to be twisted and marred in any way that doesn't accurately reflect his own thoughts, his own beliefs, his own intentions with the story, with Star Wars, with any of his other projects that he's talked about, some of which were successful, others were not. So, but for George, it's all about making sure that it accurately and authentically reflects him. And having anybody else twist it into something that isn't that is what he's fighting against, is what he wants to make sure doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So, well, I'm going to bring us home then with this kind of final instance, right towards the close of the interview, where George talks once again about the importance of fueling your imagination.
You have to work to keep nurturing your imagination, to keep feeding that interior pool from which these ideas and images.
I've never had a problem with that. I mean, my imagination runs wild. It's you know, people say, well, you're going to run out of stories. I don't think I'll ever. I have more stories than I can possibly do in my lifetime. I'm interested in more things to do than I can possibly do in my lifetime. And I'm now beginning to confront the fact that the amount of time I've got is less and less, that more and more things are going to have to go by the wayside, and I'm going to have to focus more on the things that really are meaningful to me. You know, because even if I have 30 or 40 years left, it's not enough.
Oh, George, you are a gift to this earth. I just wanted to kind of, I mean, that's literally where the interview closes out. But that's what his imagination is going to fuel the remainder of the prequel trilogy. It's going to create one of the most beloved animated series of all times in the Clone Wars, right? George is someone whose imagination is always alive, and he's always finding ways to put it out there. And I love that he, you know, there is this recognition of, I've got so many ideas, I'll never be able to tell them all. But I love that he lets all those ideas come to the surface. Again, it's that exercising of one's imagination to always keep it, you know, in shape, keep it ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It needs to be, the imagination needs to be entertained. It needs to be accessed. It needs to be allowed to run wild. And then it's up to you to figure out, all right, what ideas really mean the most to me? What ideas are feasible to accomplish? What ideas would be fun? What ideas would make sense even, you know? Because sometimes the imagination comes up with things that just, it's absolutely bonkers. And it's like, that's funny, but it doesn't mean anything. And so as, you know, as he says, he's got to find out, you know, and really devote the time to the things that really matter. Because there's no way he's going to get to all of them. And that's all, you know, as we sort of look back on a lot of the other things he said and in his worldview of how he approaches a lot of these things, that's sort of like how he is then able to filter everything that his imagination throws at him in order to say, all right, well, here's what we're going to do. And here's the project we're going to work on.
Right.
And find ways to make that fog clear in order to create, in his case, right, at this time, the best, you know, the prequels in the best way that he knows how. So,
yeah, very well put. So, you know, folks, first off, if you're at this point, this is the longest we've gone in a while, Jason, in an episode. And, So for those of you still with us, thank you. Thank you for listening through our own thoughts. And obviously we shared a lot of our own personal perspectives about life and our own belief systems for the two of us. And we hope that maybe it's even elicited thoughts around your own belief systems. Again, whatever that may look like for you. But all that to say, I think this is one of the most profoundly beautiful interviews George has ever given. A lot of George Lucas interviews, we hear a lot of the same stories. We hear a lot about, and he does talk a little bit more about filmmaking in this. He talks a lot about being a parent in this. We skipped over chunks of things for sure to kind of highlight the things that stood out to us. But this is it's a 56 minute interview. Again, easy, type in George Lucas, Bill Moyers on YouTube. It's right there for you. But it, kind of just to, again, set the tone of what George was doing with Phantom Menace. There was this desire to once again, 15 years after the original trilogy was out, to bring people back into a world of imagination, to bring people back into a world where spirituality and mystical questions and mythology are an important part of the human fabric of life. And George really wanted to elicit that and give us a sense of a morality tale with the Phantom Menace. That said, Jason, this is the perfect segue into, you know, next week. I can't wait to come back and talk our top five moments from Phantom Menace for episode 555.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. We're having this big in-depth insightful conversation about worldviews and mythology and spirituality. And next week, we're just going to come back and have a whole bunch of fun, which we hope this conversation that we've had today is also fun and entertaining and as well. But we know everything can't be this serious, even though Carl and I had a ton of fun dissecting this and talking about it. But yes, please, folks, if you have the chance, if you get the opportunity, go check out the full interview. I promise you won't regret it. There's plenty of information in there that I wish we could have spent, double the amount of time diving into. But yes, it's wherever you want to find it. It is one of the finest interviews I've seen, period. Mm-hmm. So Bill Moyer asks great questions, great follow-up questions. And George Lucas is open and honest and bears his soul and his worldview for everyone to see. So it's really well done. So I hope you check it out and you enjoy it. But Carl, if people want to weigh in on the conversation, if people want to let us know some of their own insights and things that they enjoy about the interview as a whole, where can people reach out to us?
Yeah, well, you can find us most easily and most regularly on Instagram at The Wampa's Lair. You can still find us on Twitter at Wampa's Lair, or always feel free to email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. And any final thoughts before we close this out and head towards episode 555 next week?
Just remember to follow your bliss.
There we go. And with that, this has been episode number 554 of the Wampa's Lair podcast, George Lucas on Mythology. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we'll see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.